Welcome to True Story, the Public Relations Podcast, a space where we get a peek behind the scenes of brands and businesses that have a real story to tell. Because in today's world, we are done with perfect and fake. We want to support brands that aren't afraid to show their true colors. I'm your host, Whitney Lee, the founder of True Story PR, an agency focused on helping businesses show up authentically through their social media, PR, and more. We pride ourselves on always keeping it real. Are you ready? Let's do this. Hey, everyone. I hope you're excited to hear another really cool true story about how this business and practice came to be. I'm excited today to bring Dr. Erin Ellis on the show. She's the founder and owner of Hope Natural Health, and I can't wait for you to hear her story. Welcome to the show, Erin.
Oh, gosh. Thank you so much for having me, Whitney. I'm excited to share my story with everyone.
Absolutely. Usually I call you Dr. Ellis, but over, you know, I feel like we're friends too. So, but I know you have a really cool story to tell. But I always like to first and foremost, let you tell a little bit about who you are now and your practice and where you're at now before we travel back in time and start at square one. So tell us about you.
Yeah. So as you introduced me, I am a naturopathic doctor. I have a practice called Hope Natural Health that I started in 2020, right before all the shenanigans began, not knowing that any of that was going to happen, but it honestly didn't really affect my practice and continued to thrive because people's, you know, health didn't go away. Health became actually really important. So I started in 2020, but prior to that, I was working in a naturopathic urgent care and really learned a lot about what I wanted to treat and then what I really didn't want to treat. So it was kind of like doing a residency without doing a residency. And when I was working there, I really found a passion for helping women with their hormones. And then that evolved into, you know, specifically helping women with periods, because there is definitely a stigma out there about menstrual health and, you know, things being normalized that are not normal just because it seems to be the norm for most people. So recognizing those, you know, abnormalities and pointing out and educating primarily, you know, about menstrual health, et cetera, has been really what I've been focusing on here since I started out in Gilbert, Arizona.
Love it. And Erin and I, for a little backstory for everyone, Erin and I got to know each other through a group called Founders that we were both a part of. It's for people who founded businesses. And I caught wind of a little bit of her story, and I just thought it was so unique. And it's so wild how life brings us to the places that we are. Yeah. So I wanted her to come on today and share a little bit about her story and how she got to be a naturopathic physician. Okay, take us back in time. Tell us a little bit about your backstory. I want to hear the whole evolution.
All right, let's go. So I graduated from high school and wanted to be pre-med. Well, I guess we'll start back in time. Like, I really wanted to be a teacher because that actually comes full circle too. I wanted to be a teacher when I was growing up, but then I decided that I wanted to be something in the medical field. I really wanted to be a trauma room surgeon, loved all of the medical shows that are on TV. And I graduated from high school and went to University of Arizona, which is in Southern Arizona, because they have a medical school. And I love my family and didn't want to go far away, you know, just travel outside of the state for school. So I was like, all right, U of A is close. I can still come home. That'll be a perfect place. So I started at U of A pre-med, but then quickly realized that I just didn't want to be in school for 18,000 more years. It seemed like, you know, you go to college and then go to medical school and then you got to do residency and then all of these things. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so burnt out of school. So I essentially gave up on those dreams and left U of A and came back to the Phoenix, Tempe area, took a semester off and reevaluated what I wanted to do with my life, and then went to ASU and got my degree in business, general business. So full circle, like totally 180 from, you know, medical school doing pre-med to, you know, all right, I'm going to get my degree in business. So during college, which, you know, a lot of people do, I worked in the bars and restaurants for, I mean, since I was able to serve. Yeah. I think the legal age for serving is 19 here. I think, well, to serve, I know you have to be 21 to drink alcohol, but I think I started my first job in a bar was working in the billiards room, you know, doing a pool table service and selling cigars and such. This was like back when you can smoke in bars.
The olden days. Back when.
Like, I'm totally aging myself here. So anyways, I worked and worked and worked in many bars, open restaurants, server, bartender, management, et cetera. And, you know, really loved the flexibility and I loved helping people and I loved everything about the restaurant industry. I could never sit in an office, you know, 9 to 5 doing the same thing. That's just not me. I have to have something new and challenging every single day. And so during this time of years, like decades of working in the restaurants, I was like, you know what? I still know that I could do and be more. I just didn't know what that was. So I just kept plugging along, you know, getting people drunk and serving chips and salsa. My longest stint was at a Mexican restaurant in Old Town Scottsdale, the Loco Patron, if you've ever been there. And next time you come to Arizona, Whitney, you need to eat there. It's right in Old Town.
I think I should. I mean, I'm down to test every Mexican restaurant out there.
So good. And I still love their food. I'm very biased because I mean, I worked there for so many years. And I never got sick of it. But anyways, I worked at Loco up until, I guess, like midway through med school. So anyways, working, knew I could do and be more, but still didn't figure that out. And then in 2009, at the end of 2009, I started getting this like swelling in my groin and I didn't really know what it was. I didn't think anything of it. And I didn't know what to do about it either because I'm like, well, this is weird. And so I decided to go to my gynecologist because I was like, well, it's kind of in that area. I'm like, I'll go to him and see what he says. Well, he told me that it was probably just a swollen lymph node and nothing to worry about at this time. You know, he goes, keep an eye on it. Worst case scenario, it's cancer. Like I would never will forget him telling me that. And he said, well, but you're too young for that. So it's probably just a swollen lymph node. Keep an eye on it. So kept an eye on it, not getting better, getting worse. The holidays come and go. And it was the first of the year of 2010. And I'm like, this is not getting any better. I was in a lot of pain. The swelling was getting worse. My leg, and mindful, I'm still working in the bars and restaurant and on my feet all day. So by the end of the day, that was the first thing I wanted to do was just sit and put my feet up because my leg was starting to hurt. It was my right side. And so then I called him back and I said, you know, this isn't getting any better. What do I do? And so he referred me to an orthopedic surgeon because then they thought maybe I had a hernia because I do a lot of heavy lifting with bus tubs. And we had these big windows at the bar that we had to open every day and all of this. So I was like, well, that makes sense. It's probably what it is because it's kind of in that area still. So I go to the orthopedic surgeon and he goes, let's do an MRI. Go do an MRI. Meanwhile, nothing's getting better. Go do an MRI. And then they call and tell me that I need a biopsy. And apparently when I go to the biopsy, I'll never forget it. My mom, I still go in like not even thinking anything's going on. I go in and this radiologist comes in and he's like 10 years younger than me. Never forget him. I forget his name, but I'll never forget his face. He had like curly red hair, super young. And he goes, did they tell you you have a tumor? And I said, excuse me. And my mom and I's like mouth drop. And I just sit there like kind of stunned. And I said, no. And he goes, yeah. He said, that's why we're doing the biopsy. You have a tumor the size of, I think it was like around a pea or something like that, right by my bladder. And he got me off the table and I walked around to he showed me the tumor and I still didn't really know what I was looking at, but he goes, there it is. We're going to do a biopsy. I'm actually only going to go down very superficial and take some tissue and test that right away. And if that's abnormal, then I don't need to go any further. So sure enough, he went in and did it. The superficial tissue came back abnormal because they didn't want to go down to the actual site if they didn't have to for fear because it was super close to my bladder to like puncture it. So that came back normal or abnormal and sent it off to pathology. And sure enough, I was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma at the age of 31. So it's a rare form of cancer. That the type that I had was large T-cell angioblastic, large T-cell, blah, blah, blah. It was like the longest title. Anyway, super rare, accounted for only 2% of all non-Hodgkin's lymphomas and typically found in older men. So one, it's rare. Two, it's found in older men. Three, I'm female and 31 at the time. I'm like, how is this even possible? So long story short, I'm not getting any better. I remember getting the diagnosis on a Thursday. It was February 4th, 2010 at like 5:20 in the afternoon. I was still working at Loco. I answered the phone, went into the office, and then I was told by my, the orthopedic, I think that's who called me. Yeah. The orthopedic Dr. Schuster called me and said, "Hey, you have cancer. I've set you up with Ironwood Cancer and Radiology, and you're going to meet with your oncologist tomorrow on Friday." And I was so thankful that I was able to get like an appointment right away because I'm in pain. Like my leg is hurting. It kept, you know, getting worse as the day, you know, as the days were going on, et cetera. So that following day, I did meet with the radiologist or the oncologist team, and they were about ready to give me emergency chemo just because of the amount of pain I was in, because non-Hodgkin's lymphomas or most lymphomas respond really, really well to chemotherapy. But they ended up just giving me pain pills. You had to go through all of this like slew of testing to make sure you're fit for chemo. But I ended up doing 6 rounds of chemotherapy, went through the whole like rigmarole of losing your hair, all of the stuff, never had to have surgery. But as I was sitting there dripping my first treatment, I was out of pain. That's how quick it worked. And by my third treatment, they do a scan to make sure, you know, you're progressing well. And it was 90-something% gone already. But it was one of those things like you have to, when you're prescribed an antibiotic, like they tell you, like, make sure you take it all. Same thing with like chemotherapy, still had to finish the whole protocol for what I was given for, you know, 3 more treatments. But very, very fortunate. It was July 16th, I believe, I was deemed cancer-free. And that was still, 6 months later. So I've been cancer-free now since 2010, so 13 years. But that's like really what opened my eyes to health and wellness again, because as I was going through this cancer diagnosis, someone sent me, it was a really close family friend sent me this book by Chris Carr, and she has a dormant form of another rare form of cancer that kind of lays dormant. And it was called Crazy Sexy Cancer Tips. And someone sent me this and I read the whole book in one setting. And I was just like infatuated with the tips in there and, you know, things that you can do to avoid cancer and be your healthiest self and all of this. And I was like, you know what? I'm like, I thought I was healthy, but I was very naive to a lot of things because there's stuff that we aren't taught. Like I never really drank a whole lot of water. I was exercising. I never ate vegetables because I was living by myself and vegetables like would go bad in the fridge because, yep, you know, you have to buy like a whole chunk of things and you have to eat them really quick or they go bad. So I just like didn't eat vegetables. You know, a lot of sugar, which what kid doesn't eat sugar, younger kid, you know, drinking soda. I was drinking all of these things. I mean, a lot of the stuff I just didn't know that it was, you know, could be bad for me. So opened my eyes to that. And then shortly after I met a naturopathic doctor who is a friend of a family member. And I said, "What are you?" And she goes, "I'm a naturopathic doctor." I'm like, "What's a naturopathic doctor?" And then she tells me that, you know, there's an alternative way for medicine and that you don't always have to treat with a pill or, you know, treat a band-aid on the effect. You can get to the root cause of what's going on and more like holistic and alternative medicine, et cetera. And I said, what? I still didn't even know that that even existed. And then she tells me there's a school for naturopathic doctors in Tempe, Arizona, which was like 12 minutes. The location was 12 minutes from where I was living at the time. And I said, you know what, this is insane, but I'm going to like check this out. So I went there and met with admin. And sure enough, all of my pre-med classes from the U of A from 12 years prior actually did transfer. And I only really needed to take 2 prereqs to get into this medical school. And I'm like, this is a sign that this is what I'm supposed to do. Yeah. And so I ended up taking those 2 classes. And I took them over 2 years because I added some other ones because it had been forever since I had been in school. It was 12 years because I graduated from ASU in 2002. I think. But anyways, so I took some extra classes just to kind of refresh my brain. And then in 2013, I started medical school and graduated in 2017. And here I am today. So that's kind of how I, you know, got into doing what I'm doing. So I tell people, I just had a conversation with someone last night. She goes, I didn't know about your story until you posted something. I posted something about this genetic testing I just did recently on Instagram. And she goes, I had no idea about that. And I said, yeah, I'm like, it's wild. I'm like, it seems like it was forever ago, but if that would have never happened, like I wouldn't be, you know, in this environment that I was in last night, this networking group with her, like I wouldn't have met you. Yep. Like it's just crazy how I'm a firm believer that life happens for you. And even though I never wish in a million years anyone to get cancer, I'm always looking at the silver lining of things. And I'm like, all right, what's the message in this? Or, you know, shit happens, it's going to happen, but what's the message in it? And what can I learn from it? Or how can I better myself or better someone else? And so that's how I approach everything now, because I'm super blessed and fortunate. Like there's so many people that have not, that didn't have the success I did. There is actually someone else that was, I think, a little bit younger than me going through the exact same diagnosis that I was. I think she had it in her arm or something, and she ended up not making it. And my doctors told me that. And I said, oh my gosh. And that really hit home, because that could have easily been me. Mm-hmm. But when I was diagnosed, like I never had a pity party. Okay. I had a couple crying moments. But I never really thought that I wouldn't beat it. I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to take this, you know, bull by the horn and kick its butt. And that's exactly what I did. So mindset is everything. And I had like the most positive mindset through the entire process. And I really think, you know, now, especially going through medical school and teaching patients, like there's a huge, you know, mind brain connection. And it's like, you know, you can do anything you put your mind to. And I'm a firm believer of that. And the power of prayer, like I had a giant support team. My mom has had cancer 3 times, she had cancer first. She had breast cancer, then I had my cancer, and then she ended up having endometrial cancer after me, and then breast cancer again. So there's like a huge cancer component in my family, but we have this giant support team that we call Team Ellis, you know, to help, you know, me and my mom through all of our medical journey. But yeah, it's been a wild ride. Something I, you know, like I said, never wish on anyone, but I also never regret, because it literally taught me so much about myself and got me to where I am today.
Yeah. I can't imagine, like, when you're telling the story, like I try to think about the moment, first of all, the moment that the doctor came in and was like, oh yeah, you have a tumor. And you were like, no one had told me that. And he like, so nonchalantly, just like, yeah, you got a tumor. Like,
yeah, they're very, and I think the reason why they didn't say anything, because they didn't want me to worry. The weird thing about all of my testing, that it was done on Fridays. So I had to like wait until the weekend and like over the weekend to like find out any results. And so obviously if you've been through anything medical, it's like the wait is the worst. It still is the worst. Like I had some PTSD last year with imaging and biopsies and stuff with my breast, because I'm going through some, you know, stuff with that. And I just had my MRI, follow-up MRI yesterday. And it's like, all right, now I got to wait. Like the waiting doesn't get any easier, mm-hmm. you know? And I think it's the same for anyone, even if you're not going through, you know, a health crisis, but even more so if you are, and then moving forward. So yeah, I had to wait and wait and wait. And I think that's why they didn't tell me at the time, like, oh, you have a tumor, because, you know, that can cause some undue stress. And that's obviously not good for your health, et cetera. So I mean, I'm glad that they didn't say anything, but it was definitely quite the shock, you know, when I did hear that. So
mm-hmm. How long was it? So the first time you went to them and you were like, hey, I'm like inflamed, or you said like your groin area was like, mm-hmm. you know, and they were like, oh, don't just, you know, keep an eye on it. Like, how long was that from when you noticed it until like you went back and you were like, this is really painful. Like, it's not going away. It's like hurting my leg and, you know.
Yeah. So September was when I noticed the swelling, and I could only tell, like, I still have residual scar tissue there. So in school, I was actually a good test person to see, because I still have swollen or like scar tissue from where the tumor was. And then I actually went to show my mom. I said, Mom, can you tell that like this is swollen right here? And she goes, Yeah, but I mean, only because you showed it to me, like it's not really noticeable. So mm-hmm. that started in September. And then I didn't do any further stuff until January, because like then I got super busy with the holidays and mm-hmm. and all of that. But meanwhile, during that entire time, like nothing was getting better. It was just getting worse.
Interesting. Gosh, do you think that you would be a naturopathic physician now if you hadn't been through all this? Do you think life would have like, yeah?
Absolutely not. No, I don't know what I would be doing. I mean, who knows? Probably not anything worthwhile. I mean, not that working in the bars and restaurants is worthwhile, but I just always knew that I could do something more. I was, you know, I don't know. I just knew that I could, and I just never figured that out. And so another message, you know, to people is like, it's okay. You don't need to have it figured out like tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you have to, and it's kind of the same thing with anything. It's like, sit on it, marinate, you're going to get a sign, you know, ask for some intervention, ask for some, you know, set the intention. Like I want to receive something. Please give me a sign of like what I'm supposed to do. So for me, I got a swift kick in the ass. Like, okay, you have cancer. That's your sign. Obviously not the sign I wanted, but yeah. And it's fun. Like it's fun to talk about it like this. And people are like, oh, I didn't even know. And I'm like, gosh, I guess I need to do a better job about talking about it. Cause a lot of people don't even know, especially like when I posted February 4th was my 13 year. And people are like, I had no idea. And I'm like, how did you not know? But wow. I guess unless you like, you know, catch me talking about it, then you wouldn't know. So yeah. And a lot of people don't talk about things like this, or they're, you know, embarrassed about it, or it's, you know, very personal, but I'm an open book. Like I talked all day yesterday about my imaging and why I do the imaging that I do and all of these things. So, you know, I'm an open book. So if you're, you know, listening and you have any questions, like, please reach out. I'm not afraid to talk about it at all.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's like, that's helpful for people that are going through this. And I can't, mm-hmm. I try to put myself in your shoes of the moment they come in the room or they call you and they say, hey, it is cancer. Like mm-hmm. you need to show up. We need to do chemo or whatever, you know, like I can't imagine the feeling, the surreal, like, no, this isn't happening to me. Like moment that you have.
Yeah. And, you know, I think looking back and now looking back, I think I was in a bit of a, like, this isn't a big deal type thing. And then I had a little bit of, you know, trauma that I had to work through, because what I did go through was very, very traumatic, but I don't think I really recognized that until later.
Yeah.
So I had some.
You weren't like processing it.
Yeah. I had some things in shock. I was like, what's going on? And so I had to do some therapy, and that was my venting of like what was happening, because through, you know, the treatment and everything, I was cool as a cucumber, just went through the motions. You know, it was tough. I still worked, like I mentioned, at the bar in Old Town Scottsdale. I had no hair. I wore a bandana because I live in Arizona. It's too hot to wear a wig. I had a wig. I would wear the wig when I would go out, you know, to certain things, but at work I wore a bandana. I would get stared at. People are like, what's wrong with you? And you know, they were afraid to ask questions. And it's another example of like, never judge a book by its cover. And I used to always be one of those, like, worried about what other people thought about me and like very self-conscious. Well, that quickly went out the door when I was going through treatment. Cause it's, you know, I'm rocking a bald head. Thank goodness I had a very nicely shaped head. But yeah, I mean, it really teaches you a lot about yourself and a lot of growth, you know, personally. And then that's, you know, helped me professionally. So,
yeah, I always thought that, like, and this sounds so trivial and I'm just putting this out there, I always thought to myself, like, oh my God, the idea of losing my hair. But I think when it comes down to it, you're like, screw the hair. Like I want to live. Screw if everyone wants to stare at me, you know, like,
I remember going to, so the girls, that worked at Loco Patron, and if they're listening, they'll remember this. We went for sushi. The place isn't even open anymore, but they took me out for sushi because I think I was about ready to, or I had just started chemotherapy and, or maybe somebody was going away. Anyways, there's a whole group of us that went out, and I sat, I'll never forget it. I sat at the end of my bed and I started crying because I said, this is the last time I'm going to have my hair, because it was starting to fall out and everyone's different. But I remember all my treatments were on Wednesdays. And I think this was on a Friday or Saturday night that we went out, maybe a Sunday. It was several days after my treatment. But I remember, like, I woke up one day, or I was in the shower and I was washing it, and my hair was really, no, my hair was, yeah, I was, I think it was, no, it wasn't very long. But anyways, I was putting my hands through my hair, and then I looked at it and I'm like, oh God, like sick to your stomach. And then I remember waking up the next morning and my head just hurt. And it's the only thing I could describe it is like when you go to prom or you get like the updo and they put like 17,000 bobby pins in your hair and you take it out and you're like, oh, my head hurts so bad.
Yeah.
That's how it felt. And so at the time I had a friend who was a hairstylist who was doing my hair. And so I called her up in tears and I said, my hair is falling out. Is there any way you can get me in? Like, I kind of just want it off because it hurts so bad. And she got me right in. So I ended up having, I made the most of it. I had so much fun. I had her dye it really, really dark. And then I also had her shave it into a mohawk because I'm like, why not? It's going to fall out. So let me have fun with it.
Yeah.
And because I had blonde, like I had blonde hair back then too. And this isn't my natural hair. I rocked my natural color for quite some time until I started getting gray hair. And then I'm like, I got to dye it again. But I wanted to see what I look like with really dark hair because I didn't remember. It had been so long since I had dyed it blonde. And so I had fun with it. And then, you know, it even then she buzzed it and it was still so, so painful. So I had to like bick it. And after that, it was like, it was actually pretty cool to not have hair. One, I saved so much time in the morning. Two, I never had to shave my legs. I didn't have to shave my armpits. Like I lost everything. You lose eyebrow hair, you eyelash hair, you lose like you're back in like puberty. So you look like a little, you know, child, but I saved a lot of time because I didn't have to do anything. But it was traumatic. That was probably the worst part of the whole thing was because that's our symbol as women. It's like,
yeah,
you know, I pulled a Britney and I didn't mean to pull a Britney, but I did. And, you know, it sucked, but it grew back.
Yeah. But how tough are you now? Now it's like, what does that even matter? You know, right? Like if you're going to lose your life, like screw the hair, like
exactly.
Forget the hair. So since you started the practice, I know that you serve a lot of women with periods, like period issues and things like that. But also just owning a business is wild. Yeah, it's like a roller coaster. So for people listening that own a business, they probably understand. I always say on the outside looking in, you can't understand it. And from the inside looking out, you can't explain it. So like entrepreneurs, we're in this like little imaginary club that we only understand. I used to say this about being in a sorority. I was in a sorority and you can't explain it to somebody who's never been in one.
No.
And on the outside looking in, they can't understand it. And I love asking every business owner or entrepreneur that comes on the show this question. Like when you own a business, we all reach a time that we have that like breakdown of like, maybe this is it. Like, maybe I should just quit. Maybe I should just give up. Like, I'm not going to get through this. And, you know, after you survive cancer, you know, I feel like you can get through anything. But did you ever have that moment in business where you're like, you know what? Maybe this isn't for me. Maybe I should just close up shop.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that's happened like multiple times. But what gets me is like, okay, you know, not every day is glitter and roses, like I say, but quickly I bounce back because I get, you know, a message from a patient that's like, oh my gosh, you have literally changed my life. I feel so much better. And then I'm like, okay, this is why I do what I do and why I keep going every single day and why I show up for my patients. So it's, you know, yeah, there's times when I'm like, this isn't fun. But then I also reevaluating like my energy and my boundaries and like, well, maybe I need another day off. I mean, we're business owners. We can make our own damn schedule. Mm-hmm. So it's like, maybe I'm working too much, you know, and that happened to me, I think in 2023? So I think 2022, yeah, last year was a rough year for me. I was just working and working and I never stopped putting the gas on. I was just gas pedal to the metal, like for 2 years. And I'm like, whoa, I got to slow down. I'm like not wanting to work, super stressed, you know, crabby all the time. So yeah, there's definitely times. But
you have a specific time that like you remember that you were like, I almost gave up at this moment.
Yeah, I remember having a breakdown in the laundry room with Fred, my fireman, my partner, and he goes, "Why don't you just get help?" And I said, "Well, I think I might need to. And so I think at that point I hired someone. I don't remember when this was exactly. I remember the time or the instance, but I don't remember the date of that. But, you know, sometimes it's like you hold in all of this stuff and then you just break down. And I had that breakdown. And then I was like, I think I just need help. And I hired an assistant and someone to help me. And that was probably the best decision. But we're not meant to do life or business alone, as Lindsay Schwartz from Powerhouse Women always says. Yeah. And she's absolutely 100% true. And it takes a lot for us to realize that. But once you understand that, then it's, you know, it's glorious. I'm sure I'll have other instances, you know, but then I'm like, all right, what is the message in this? What is this telling me? So I go back to like my whole philosophy on life. Like, why am I feeling like this? And I reevaluate what's going on, or maybe I need to take time off or set some more boundaries or whatever the case may be.
Well, I feel like after beating cancer, anything in business is just trivial. You know what I mean? Like, so completely trivial when you're like, I had a bad week, whatever, you know, like,
oh gosh,
it's not cancer.
Well, yeah. And I try and, you know, motivate and inspire people too. It's like, whoa, I live that, you know, every day too. It's like, I can't complain about this because there's people that are trying to beat cancer. It's like, why, what's the point of squabbling about this? You know, we're always keeping that in mind. It's like, it always could be worse because it really could.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Okay. So before we wrap up, the one thing I want to mention to everybody, if you're on TikTok, you totally need to follow Erin because she's had, or Dr. Ellis, excuse me. You need to follow her because she's had some really awesome TikToks go viral and they're all period related, which of course, like the women are sharing these like out of control. So Dr. Ellis, tell us if somebody wants to connect with you after this, tell them how to find you on all the platforms, but especially y'all go find her on TikTok.
Yeah. So I'm very active on social media. I love social media. I've connected with so many women through social media. So Instagram, Dr. Erin Ellis, same on TikTok. And I'm Dr. Erin Ellis, NMD on Facebook. So yeah. And then you can find all the links on my website on hopenaturalhealth.com. Awesome. I also have a podcast too. Hope Natural Health podcast.
Yes. Check her out. And honestly, like ladies, you know, she always says like, if you're feeling like crap for your period, that's not normal. You know, that's, you know, and we're trained to think that as women of like, oh, you're going to feel like crap once a month. You're going to be tired. You're going to be exhausted. You're going to be grumpy. You're going to be physically in pain. So if that's you, you need to holler at Dr. Ellis because she's got the key. So.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your story. God, you're so freaking brave. And I'm like honored to be your friend. So.
Oh, thank you, Whitney. I'm thank you for having me and allowing me to share it.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. If you loved what you heard, please take a moment to screenshot this episode and share it to social media using hashtag TrueStoryPR, or better yet, write us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you tune in. See you next time for another True Story.